Slicer Tangents is brought to you by Shopify, the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the did we just hit a million order stage and everywhere in between. Sari and Hank, can you name anything that works so well? It's practically magic.
Dragonflies.
Toilets.
What? Yeah, okay. Well, here's one off the top of my head. How about selling with Shopify? Ooh. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and it helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Ooh. Not to mention, it's got award-winning customer support there to help you on your path to success. And those are just a few reasons to love Shopify. But Hank, what does your company, DFTBA, like so much about Shopify?
We've been using Shopify, I think, for over 10 years now, and it really has scaled extremely effectively with us. It is both a huge amount of information at your fingertips, but also in a way that makes it fairly easy to make the decisions you need to make, learn the things you need to learn, and do the things you need to do. It's all in there. And it's one of the great joys of my life is going into the Shopify backend and being like, look at all these people who wanted a thing that I had.
What a rich life you lead indeed.
And if you want to experience great joys like that too, I've got a magic trick for you. Poof. You can now try Shopify for a month for only $1. That's right. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tangents, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/tangents now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in, and experience the little joys of looking at the back end of a store. shopify.com/tangents, all lowercase. Abracadabra.
Hey everybody, Sam here with a very spooky Halloween technical note. So while we were recording this episode, both Hank and our very special guest recorded using the wrong microphone. It sounds pretty good anyway. Just wanted to give you a heads up. Enjoy the episode. It's a good one.
Welcome to SciShow Tangents, the frightfully competitive science knowledge screen case. I'm your ghost, Hank Gangrene. And joining me this week, as always, is mad scientist, Scary Riley.
Eek!
And our resident every wolfman, Sam Skulls.
What else do they say besides a woo? I said that last week. A woo again.
The old calendar on the wall says it's Halloween time once more. And as you know, we here at SciShow Tangents love to get into the Halloween spirit. And this year's no different. October will be trick-or-treat month. And Sam and Sari have invited some ghoulish guests over to the Tangents Manor to join us this week. In fact, I hear one of them approaching the door now. Who is it?
Hello!
Why, it's our mystery guest, Lulu Miller, host of Radiolab, author of Why Fish Don't Exist, and host of Terrestrials, a kid-friendly podcast full of stories from the people who brought you Radiolab. Hello!
Hello! Hello. How's it going?
It's great. It's so good to see you. I had to be spooky there for a long time, but I'm just going to sort of settle back into normal now.
Wait, yeah. I want to stay spooky. Why can't I be Boo Boo Miller or Ghoul Ghoul Miller? Or
I didn't even think of that.
That's all I got.
Lulu Killer?
Boo Boo Killer.
There we go.
Boo Boo Killer?
Boo-boo. Yeah. Boo Boo Killer. Perfect. Well, thanks for joining us, Boo Boo.
Hey, Boo Boo.
So I'm legitimately always surprised. I do not know who our special mystery guests are going to be, which makes me very nervous. But I'm very excited to see you. Never met before.
I know. This is so, I'm so happy to be in the, like, my safe space of pure science nerdery. It's where I want to reside. I'm honored and excited to be here. It's so awesome to meet you all.
Hank talks about your book all the time. Well, I gotta tell
you. Very good. We actually made a SciShow episode today. We just filmed it. It was a collab with the Monterey Bay Aquarium about whether or not we're fish.
And what did they say?
That it's a lot of that. That, like, cladistics and conversation are different things, and that if you ask for a fish donkey, you shouldn't expect to get a cow in it. But cows are fish.
I love it. So like basically conversationally, no, but scientifically, accurately, yes.
Yeah, there's no fish. Yeah. In terms of this particular tool, which is quite useful, if it seems like we're being pedantic, I guess we are. But like there's a useful tool here and we have to stick with it. And there are no fish. There are lots of different kinds of fish. And we can sort of settle on that. Every week here on Tangents, we get together to try to unnerve, disgust, and horrify each other with science facts while also trying to stay on topic. Our panelists are playing for Gory and for Candy, which we'll be awarding as we play. And at the end of the episode, one of us will be crowned the King of Halloween. And if the guest is the treat of this trick-or-treat month, here is the trick. Our regular panel will take turns presenting games this month, and I get to play along for once. Now, as always, we're going to introduce this week's topic with the traditional science poem, this week from Lulu.
This is called Show Me a Sadder Thing Than Elytra.
Okay. Oh, wow. It's beautiful already.
They are a body part known to the beetle. The word itself sounds a little Greekal. like Electra, the gal who lusted for her dad. But I promise you, Elytra is much more sad. You may know it as the little shell over the beetle's wing, but evolutionarily, it's more like a muzzle over what once could sing. Oh. Consider the cruel forces by time concealed that forced the creature's wings to harden into shield. So depressing. I'm sorry. It's a sad word. It's a horrible thing.
I mean, so it was a very good poem, but I did contain the word, I think, Greekal.
So Greekal was one of the words in that poem, which is a lesser known version of Greek-ish.
Gotcha.
Sure.
So the topic for the day is creepy crawlies, which I guess we did specifically so that we wouldn't have too much trouble defining it among with a guest who knows maybe too much about taxonomy.
I feel like if anyone's going to define creepy crawlies, it's going to be this group of people. We're going to draw some really hard boundaries that science has never seen before.
Mm-hmm. Can't have a spine. Can't have a spine. A mouse isn't a creepy crawly.
That's what I was operating under.
Has to be
under.
Invertebrate.
Has to be terrestrial. You can't get creepy crawlied by a lobster.
Oh, I think you can get creepy crawlied by a little shrimp, though, don't you?
A little creepy crawly marine bug. Yeah.
What about those spiders? The spider crabs. Are they creepy crawlies?
They're too big, I think.
There's a size limit. You can't be bigger than a fist. If it's bigger than a fist, that's not a creepy crawly. That's just terrible.
What's a tarantula? Is a tarantula not a creepy crawly?
Or a big scorpion?
Those are creepy crawlies. What if it's a scorpion the size of a person? Is that a creepy crawly? Is there a line?
It's great. I never thought about this. How the smallness is a part of it. Like it sneaks up and then it's all gnarly.
Yeah. Because if it like makes the sound of a normal person like coming into a door, like opening the door, walking in, and you're like, that's...
then it's just a monster.
Yeah, it's a monster. That's just a bear with an exoskeleton now. It has to be able to crawl on you.
Are we including soft, like slugs, you know, like a slug snail?
I think you got to have legs.
Oh, shoot. No. Well, I have to leave then.
I think worms can be creepy crawlies. They're part of the Halloween bowl of worms bowl of spaghetti. Worms. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they can crawl on you without any legs.
I think you got to go, ooh, when it crawls on you, too.
I don't know that a mouse counts.
Does a butterfly not count?
Butterflies are obviously not. Yeah, but and no birds except for the ugly ones.
Except for like a ratchet cardinal. This is dirty and kind of like intimidating.
Birds can be creepy crawlies, but only if they're like really like, eh.
Just gross. Just off-putting birds.
With the babies that don't have feathers yet, totally a creepy crawly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Totally.
What about a human baby? I don't know. I think a human baby could be pretty creepy.
If a human baby was crawling up
they
you.
Are. Especially if it sneaks up on you. Crawl.
Yeah. Good. I'm glad. So we're
talking about slugs, spiders,
human babies,
beetles and babies, and lampreys. Naked birds.
It has to be alive. Nope. It could be dead, but it has to have once been alive. All right, so I feel like we got it all under control. Sarah, do you have any etymological wisdom to share with us before we move on?
The word creepy crawly, the compound word, because it has a hyphen in between it, was first used in 1858, as far as we can tell, to refer to an insect or animal. I disagree with the fact that it could be used for an animal with a spine, but one time in a book in 1923, or I assume it was a book, but I'm not sure, they referred to kangaroo babies as creepy crawlies.
What? That makes sense to me.
Yeah, sure.
Wait,
yeah.
Can we just stop and talk about kangaroo babies for a second?
That's why it's called tangents.
Yeah. Okay, guys, is it true that like a kangaroo baby, when it is first birthed, is the size of like a beetle and crawls up the pouch and back in. And it's like a little beetle vertebrate mammal.
Yeah.
And then it hides in the pouch and like incubates and then becomes like the cute size you see in cartoons, like a puppy size.
It is really weird that they have to get into the pouch. Like, could you not just...
Wait, do we know what the beetle... Is it actually the size of a beetle and is it hairless? Like, has anyone watched it?
I have seen it. I've seen a video crawling along the hairs. It's a wet little eyeless...
Like a jelly bean.
Jelly bean, yeah.
Wow, with little legs.
Yeah, it's like a Birdie Bots every flavor bean, and the flavor is baby kangaroo.
Okay, that's for sure. Okay, you know what?
The flavor is
I
meat,
go with that
please.
Book in 1923. I think that's a creepy crawly.
Yeah, that's a creepy crawly.
Okay, okay. Sure. I see it. Okay, so I feel like we are settled on having no idea what a creepy crawly is. That means it is time to move on to the quiz portion of our show. Sam is going to be doing I think... It's weird for me to not be in charge, you guys.
I'm back in the saddle again. Like 4 years ago was the last time I did a truth or fail, but I did my best. So for anybody who doesn't know what truth or fail is, like maybe Lulu, I'm going to say three facts. One of them's real. Two of them are fake. Of all the creepy crawlies in the world, none are more lowly than the lowly worm. They're slimy. They eat nasty, rotten stuff. They don't even have legs. But there are, relatively speaking, some spectacular worms out there worthy of at least some small degree of admiration. So today I present to you three worm superlatives, but only one of them is real.
This is why you said you had to leave the podcast if worms didn't count as creepy crawlies.
Yeah, I'm screwed if worms don't count. Number one, the award for longest worm goes to the bootlace worm, a marine worm that can grow up to be 100 feet long. There are even some unconfirmed reports of worms almost 200 feet long, but you wouldn't want to pull yourself up by this bootlace. Its body is covered in thick, toxic mucus. Number two, the award for the slimiest worm goes to the Numera worm, an annelid that produces about four times more slime than your average earthworm. The slime has an antimicrobial property that keeps it safe from parasites and may have useful medical applications for humans. It does come with a trade-off, though. The Numera worm is the slowest known worm. And number three, on the other side of that coin, the award for fastest worm goes to the sapphire worm. An annelid that, in tests, has shattered the worm land speed record by traveling about 7 inches in 90 seconds. It uses this enormous speed to dodge other predatory worms as it goes about its day eating leaf litter. Which worm is real? The bootlace worm is the longest worm, the Numera worm, the slimiest worm, or the sapphire worm, the fastest worm?
I absolutely believe that all of those worms are real worms. I think I may have even heard of all of them. The
I hope not.
the slime thing is very interesting to me because I am obsessed with slime. I have become recently obsessed with slime because I started to try and write a SciShow episode about the largest molecules. And slime, it turns out, depending on how you count, is almost definitely the largest biological molecule because it can be just one molecule. So they can form disulfide bonds and so all these proteins come together, they form disulfide bonds basically from what I can tell, though I haven't got an expert to confirm this yet, the entire inside of your intestinal tract is covered in one molecule of slime.
What
the heck?
Wait, I have a lot of slime questions now. Is slime like a taxonomy of slime? I mean, is the slime in us the same? Like, what is slime? That's my question.
Yeah, yeah. There's this class of proteins called mucins, or I think it's mucins. It may be mucins. I think it's mucins. And that's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about
sequel
the slime
to minions.
Inside of us. They're like me. They're like minions, but they're way worse. They're
just gross. Yeah.
Stretch.
Like Stretch Armstrong minions. And I think that is similar to how other, I think that this is a fairly common way of creating slimy stuff. Like, you know, those eels that are really slimy, they sort of excrete these proteins that then bind together a lot of water. And that's part of how they work really well, is they just get a huge amount of water to gloop into it. And that's part of their, the mechanism of how the proteins become functional. So I like that. And I bet there's some slimy worms out there, but also the eels make me think that maybe Sam was thinking about eels and he made up worms that were slimy.
Minions can stretch. I would like to say that minions can stretch already.
I don't know very much about minions.
Can they join together and become one large, one single minion?
No, they can't do that. What do we think about fast worms? How about those, huh?
There's got to be a fastest worm.
There's
got to
be, right?
There's got to be a fastest and the slowest. I don't know if that's fat. How 7 inches in 90 seconds?
Yeah.
That felt slow. Okay.
That feels slow.
Like, it's when a I did worm. My official test of
they
like.
They can flail.
7 inches. And then that just feels like I've seen a worm go faster than that in 90 seconds.
And like swimming worms?
Yeah.
They must.
This is a land worm. This is specifically a land speed record
for a worm.
I see. Yeah. It's the cheetah of worms.
Yes, it is.
The bootlace was convincing because of the unconfirmed 200. Like, that felt very human, real, unconfirmed, trying to reach for a bigger superlative. What threw me off was, like, the generally toxic. Like, toxic to whom? And I'm going with slime. Slime's my guess, too. Okay, the slimiest.
Slime. I'm going to go with the bootlace worm because I think it would be cool if it existed, because it just seems too long to be real.
I'm going with the bootlace worm because it is the correct fact.
Ooh. Oh, no.
Hank.
You think I don't know what the longest worm is? Who am I?
Oh, shoot. Well, okay. So the bootlace worm is real. And with a scientific name like Linnaeus longissimus, you know this fool's long.
Is this long line?
Yeah. So while they do usually only grow to be 5 to 10 millimeters, there are some specimens that are definitely about 100 feet long. The longer examples of bootlace worms, like the 180-foot worm reported in Scotland in 1864, have drawn a little bit of scrutiny because this worm is extremely stretchy and could easily be stretched by external forces.
Oh, is it long or were we having a good time?
I think they think the 100-foot worm did get that way by itself. Unless like two sea turtles grabbed on each end and went, I don't know.
They were on a romantic date. A stray and a well-kept one.
They have a sticky hands of the sea. Someone was whipping it around, slapping it on rocks.
Yeah. But if the worms can get that long, they aren't just the longest worm. They are the longest animal, period. And they produce a thick, toxic slime allegedly smells like sewage and can kill crabs. So pretty weird little guys.
What do they do with all their length? What do they – do they strangle? Do they just, like, try to not be incredibly vulnerable?
Right?
Like a giant sub just open for – and you said they're marine?
Yeah, they're marine.
Okay.
Yeah. I do not know what they do with all their length.
You know, I have a guess, and I don't know if this is real, but my guess is that bootlace worms get long because it just happens to happen. It's just what happens when they succeed, and they just get longer and longer and longer until somebody chomps them up.
That sounds right. So the slimy Numera worm isn't real. In fact, the name Numera is the Japanese name of the Pokemon Gumi, who is a slimy little Pokemon.
Wow, I was wrong. I hadn't heard of that worm.
Well, maybe you played Pokemon in Japan.
Maybe it's sort of
hard to search what the actual slimiest creature on Earth is, because the hagfish really dominates any slime-based searches that you might try to do.
Yeah.
But it's probably hagfish. They're probably the slimiest creature. I don't know what the slimiest worm is. Eels have slime that protect them from various microbial invaders, and it like protects wounds, but I'm not sure if it has medical uses. And I found also in an article that said that slimier snails are slower. Should you find yourself betting on snail races, you should bet on the least slimy snail.
For the, for the driest snail.
Just for the dry.
Good to know.
So that's why I said he was the slowest of all worms. Finally, the sapphire worm was named after the sapphire computer virus, which spread in 2003 and seems to be the fastest spreading computer virus of all time.
Oh.
So the speed statistic of 7 inches every 90 seconds is the speed of a particularly fast leopard slug documented by a worm. By like snail and slug scientists from Carnegie Museum of Natural History, who said that the real fastest snail or slug was what I was looking for, was one that went up in the space shuttle. So,
yeah,
but dunked.
Yeah, uh-huh. There was no real answer really.
There's got to be a fastest snail or slug, and I think that we should do that work as a species.
Dude, well, this guy is doing this work. He showed off his little slug racetrack, and he was like, the fastest one I found goes 7 inches every 90 seconds.
How do you make a slug go fast? Like,
you
can't tell.
Yeah.
Well, you can't tell which is the fastest slug because you can't tell them to race. Like, maybe one of them is just walking more slowly because they want to take their time that day. So you have to give them something, some motivation.
Just a little, you know, slug attack dog. It's like a slug, but it has little teeth.
Yeah, and we'll get that guy on next week and we'll ask him.
Says wolf.
Okay, that sounds good. That sounds good. Next, we're going to take a short break, and then Sari has another devious game for us.
SciShow Tangents is brought to you by Rocket Money, a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. Money is annoying. You have to remember so much stuff, like your bank account password and your PIN number. You got to balance your checkbook, and I don't even know what that means to balance your checkbook. You got to put all your receipts in a folder or something probably too. And who has time for all that? Not me, the old money dummy himself. But if you don't manage your finances, there can be dire consequences. Like maybe, for instance, you pay your utility bill twice, huh?
You know, we all make mistakes. We all move sometimes. My partner and I moved recently. I didn't think to check the old utility accounts, but then I was doing my taxes and going through all the utility bills. And we logged into our old account and I was like, what the heck? There's a couple $100 bill here for an apartment that we don't live in anymore. Mm. What's going on here?
The electric company's just like, thank you very much.
Yeah. And I was just too busy and too tired to figure out that out until mid-February when I was like, oh, shoot. But boy, would it have been easier if we had an app that said, you're paying your utility bill twice.
The unfortunate truth of the matter is it's important to keep on top of your finances. But the fortunate truth is that Rocket Money exists. Rocket Money gives you a clear view of your expenses, letting you see your spending in one place at a glance. Rocket Money gives you the power to easily track your monthly spending, create custom budgets, and even find and cancel unwanted subscription services and also potentially utility bills for old apartments you don't live in anymore. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when you use all the app's features.
Stop wasting money on things you don't use, like subscription services, and stop paying your power bill twice, like I almost did. Thankfully didn't. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions and manage your finances the easy way by going to rocketmoney.com/tangents. That's rocketmoney.com/tangents. rocketmoney.com/TANGENTS.
Welcome back, everybody. We're tied at 3, except for Lulu, who has nothing.
And you're tied at 1, right?
Representing the nobodies.
We're tied at 1. We're
here.
Tied at 1. All 3 of us are tied, except for Lulu, who has nothing. And Sari has a game for us. Sari, what are we going to do? What are we about to do?
I made up a game. It's hopefully pretty simple. The game is called Mate, Murder, or Mislead. I had other options: fornicate, fight, or flee; copulate, consume, or camouflage. But the M's really won it. And the premise of the game is pretty straightforward. I will present
Ryan Gosling, Ryan Seacrest, and Ryan Adams.
Yeah, maybe inspired by another game, but this one's sciencey. So I'll present you with a creepy crawly body part or behavior, and you tell me whether it's mainly for mating, which is sexual reproduction, murdering, aka catching prey or otherwise eating nutrients, or misleading, which I'm considering any anti-predator adaptation to keep them from being eaten. Here's how the scoring works. If you get it right, you get a point. If you get it wrong, you get no points. And if all of three of you get it wrong, I get 3 points. One strategy would be to divide your votes, and I'll get no points this whole time, and I can't stop you. But I have a feeling that won't happen. I'm basing this off of another board game that I've played. Points are the hardest part of games. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm. Ready.
Number one. Railroad worms got their name because they have 11 pairs of dorsolateral lanterns along their body segments that glow a yellowish color thanks to bioluminescence. In other words, they look like little train cars with glowing windows. Wow. Scientists think these lateral lanterns are for mating, murdering, or misleading.
I'm going to guess it's for murdering because you're drawing things to you with light, I believe.
I think it's mating. I think that it's like a deep sea vibe and it's hard to find mates down there. So you got to glow.
Yeah, like a deep sea firefly. Like, doo-doo, look at me. But here's my question. For mating, meaning like it's the business, it's like a private part, or just it helps you mate?
So I'm considering it like mostly used for something to do with mating. So like researchers look at it and say those lights are sex related, help you in some way. Aren't necessarily like the inserting part, but like the attractive bit.
I think I'm going mate too. I'm going mate.
Okay. The answer is misleading.
Oh!
Which that was surprising. So railroad worms are the larval form of multiple genera of Brazilian beetles. And both the larval forms and the adult forms maintain these light organs and glow to some capacity. They use luciferin and luciferase, like fireflies, to do their bioluminescing. And they have lanterns on their heads and their sides. And researchers think the ones on their heads help them see in the dark, but the lateral lanterns seem to be for self-defense because they only flash them pretty much when they're surprised, and a sudden flash can repel potential predators. So it can draw attention to you.
It's like a taser. It's like bear spray. It's like bah!
But like a more like a security light, like an on the outside of your house, where it like, so like all blinds. Of a sudden goes. Yeah. Like,
whoa. And it's just on the larva. Like the adults don't have. It's just when you're a little vulnerable larva.
I think the larva light up more often, but the adult forms also have it along their sides. And adult females also seem to glow while protecting their eggs. And so that's why they think it has something to do with defense, too. Something about
it's a classic,
these like multiple
it's a classic
lights.
Maternal glow. It just happens. Yeah. Whoa, that is so cool.
Is
I
very
love
cool.
that fact.
I've never heard about that. That's so cool.
Number two. Velvet worms are also not taxonomically worms, so to speak. They are in a loose group called panarthropods and are sort of cousins to arthropods and tardigrades with their many feet and soft, wiggly bodies. They have oral papillae, one on each side of their head, that wildly spew out a protein-rich slime. Are those slime jets mostly for mating, murdering, or misleading?
There's got to be murder slime jets.
I think it's murder slime jets, too.
I want them to be boom boom slime. So I'm going to go with that. That'll be my guess.
We're all going with murder?
No, I'm going. No, I'm mating. Going mating.
Boom, boom,
yeah. Boom,
boom,
boom, please, boom,
boom. I didn't
boom,
understand
Hank.
What boom, boom was.
Boom, chicky, boom, boom, chicky, wow, wow.
Boom, boom, to Hank is murder.
Let me translate. Boom, chicky, wow, wow, jets. Uh-huh.
What is it, Sari?
It is for murdering. So most of the videos studied show this slime as an attack against prey, such as beetles or spiders or crickets. They store the slime in a reservoir in their bodies, and then squeeze it out at estimated speeds of around 8.6 meters per second or 19.2 miles per hour. And they don't actually point their papillae. They just push the fluid through it so fast that it waves about wildly, kind of like a garden hose. They just spray slime kind of willy-nilly. And then as it gets sprayed as a liquid, but as it settles onto the prey, it becomes a stickier or stiffer polymer thread, kind of closer to a spider web. So as the beetle or spider wiggles around, the slime stiffens up, and
I love this.
Then they eat whatever they want to eat.
Oh yeah, wow. That's great. That's so high quality.
It's just encased in the slime.
Yeah. It's caught in the slime like a little net.
What if that was people? What if that was people?
I know.
Like, there's nothing that says that wouldn't have been one of our strategies at like a primate strategy for success, and then we end up becoming a sentient slime shooter.
And according to Hank, we've got the slime in the intestine.
We can make it. Yeah, if you could excrete it in there, you can excrete it anywhere. That's what I always say.
Number three. House centipedes feel like the platonic ideal of creepy crawly, with their 30-ish long and gangly legs that radiate out from their bodies. One behavior they do with their super long back legs, which are really flexible and segmented, is called lassoing. Are there leg lassos for mating, murdering, or misleading?
I think they're boom boom lassos.
I'm going to guess murder again. I don't know. That just feels right to me.
Wait, so their legs are lassos? Like, they can, like, what does that mean?
Their back legs are really long. All of their legs are really long. House centipedes are, like, gangly. But their back legs are especially flexible and segmented and do something called lassoing. So,
okay, I'm taking it back. It's mating.
Yeah, I'm going mating. I'm just staking on my mating guess here.
100% boom boom.
100% boom boom and 0% correct. No! It is, in fact, for murdering. Yeah. Oh. They have one researcher called arthropod Swiss Army knives, which I thought was very funny. And so, like, centipedes have a lot of different legs that are differentiated for different things. So, for example, they have some specialized legs that act as fangs. But these leg lassos are used to rope around prey and restrain them, sometimes multiple at a time, so it can eat one and have one caught for a snack for later. House centipedes feed on cockroach nymphs, flies, moths, bedbugs, crickets, silverfish, earwigs,
and all kinds
of pests. Yeah, so even though we think of house centipedes as a creepy crawly, a lot of the pest websites are like, don't kill it because they eat things that you like less.
They are terrifying.
Here's the thing. If it doesn't have any food, it'll die on its own. If it does have food, that's a bunch of things in your house that you don't want.
Well, do you want me to give you an impromptu, creepy, crawly, gross out fact?
Yeah,
that's
sure.
Related to cockroach nymphs, yes. While we're on the topic. Do you know what I did on Friday?
I wasn't there.
Did you eat something weird? Did you find?
You ate something weird?
So, turns out, again, this room probably knows it, but it was news to me about a month ago. There is a species of cockroach that does not lay eggs, but gives live birth to babies. Yeah. And as part of that, creates milk. Cockroach milk has been analyzed and is believed to be one of the most nutritious milks on the planet. It has all 9 amino acids. It has calories. It has proteins. It has omega fatty oils. It's not lactose-based, so it could, in theory, be a nice form of milk for the lactose intolerant among us. So, what did I drink?
You drank
on Friday?
How much can you get?
I got a small vial along with a guest entomologist, Dr. Sammy Ramsey, who told me about it, who's heard about it for 10 years and has always wanted to try it because he eats all the bugs. And we did a taste test, and we guessed we had cow milk and goat milk and oat milk and roach milk, and I had to guess, and it was very clear.
it was not tricky.
It was really disgusting. It tasted like acrid. I think in the moment I called it the broken dreams of sunshine. Like, it was sparkle. It was like so bad. Anyway, but there are people looking into whether we could bottle it for a more sustainable future.
So. Well,
I don't keep your eyes out on the milk aisle.
If it, I have some issues with the idea.
Well, have you ever had a jelly bean though? I mean, you've eaten a bug secretion.
Yep. No. I'm basing this on what, if you thought that it tasted like sunshine and rainbows, I would be excited about the possibilities. But if it tastes like garbage, I've smelled the inside of a cockroach before. It's bad in there.
It's not good.
It's bad in there. Well, so they haven't, this was just like straight from the lab. I mean, this was like not treated. This was not like the company with like a cute name adding sugar. Like this was just like, I basically nursed a cockroach. But I boiled it. But anyway, so should I go? Like, did I achieve the creepy crowd? You do feel ill? Have I done Halloween right for you?
Yeah.
I kind of want to taste it too, though.
Yeah. Okay.
It's definitely worse.
See what I can arrange. I know a guy. I know a guy. I gotta hook up in Omaha.
Get me a vial. I'll send you my address.
I'd also like to note that I have 0 points in any game so far.
Maybe this will be the one.
Yeah.
Okay. So bark lice are tiny brown insects that feed on small debris like fungi or poop or whatnot, and the Neotragla genus are found in Brazilian caves, where they use barbed appendages called gynosomes to go about their lives. Are these gynosome barbs for mating, murdering, or misleading?
I feel like the name gynosomes.
Yeah, you're trying to fake us out with the gyno.
Are they very big, or are they gynosomes? Like, are they giant, or are they gyna? This is the question.
I can give you the spelling if you want.
Well, yeah, it's in the what's flow. Can you use it in a sentence?
Oh, well,
it's a boom boom.
She's tricking us, but it's mating.
Barbed, miss. Hold on, guys. I'm not ready. I'm guessing wherever I go is going to be wrong, so don't follow me here. But where I'm going is murder.
A Lulu.
It was just obvious. There was no
fake out. I've been waiting for you.
This was literally the easy. This was the softball. I thought you were head faking.
You were getting, you were guessing mating every time. But yeah, this is what I was betting on this game. Yeah.
I appreciate your
is that you would everyone would overthink this. But all four species of the Neotragla genus of bark louse have opposite structured sexual organs. So the females have a gynosome that gets erect and has barbs to stab into the male's cavity, which is very weird.
Yeah.
They have sex that lasts up to 70 hours, which is probably why the barb exists, so that they can just like stay interlocked. Uh-huh. And the gynosome sucks up and transfers the semen. So it's kind of like a straw rather than a squirt gun. This is like very weird. And the only time we found it.
It doesn't suck it up very quickly. It seems like it might be fairly passive if it takes 70 hours.
Gotta work on that.
That's a thick milkshake right there.
Oh, God. Thicker than the cockroach milk for sure.
Oh, my God. Lulu Miller, thank you so much for spending some time with us on this episode of SciShow Tangents. We started a little late and Lulu has to go pick up her kids. So we're going to do the science couch without you. How will we ever learn? But I'm so glad to know that you have put the grossest thing in your mouth.
I'm happy to come here and provide that those factoids and no correct answers. You guys are the best. If you are into bugs, we have this brand new series that's called Terrestrials. It's all about the strangeness right here on Earth. I think it's spiritually aligned to what y'all are doing, which is looking at creatures and showing that that they often work in ways you don't believe nature is supposed to work, and that we don't need to look up to the stars or to aliens to find kind of wonder here. And I think it's the most fun I've ever had making something. So I'd love if you check it out, even if you aren't a kid or aren't a parent. My secret hope is that like a fadult would like it too, just a fun adult, or a sadult, like a sad adult who needs to be cheered up, like just needs to go on a walk with their geeky nature friend. I'm here to provide that service.
I'm both. Too.
Adults and sadults, welcome. Have fun on the couch. I'll miss you. I'm there in spirit.
And Lulu's going to be back for the butt fact, so stay tuned.
Final candy count. Sam has 3. I have 3. Lulu has none. And Sari has 7.
It's almost like the game.
The games is a leg up. Yeah.
It's hard not to make a game where you crush everybody.
And now it is time to ask the science couch, where we got some listener questions for our couch of finely honed scientific minds. Sam, what is our question?
Vita Bjornin on Discord asks, I used to hear that the brown recluse had a potent venom. Then I heard that it's actually a staph infection that does the majority of the damage in the things it bites. What's the truth? I've always wondered about this too, because it seems like spiders can F you up, but I don't know if they're effing you up or if something else is effing you up. As someone who thinks about spiders all the time, I've heard conflicting reports.
I don't actually know the answer to this question, but it does seem like From what I've seen of brown recluse bites, they last for a very long time, which it feels more like an infection than a venom to me. Sari, do you know the answer?
I do. In fact, I researched it just for this very podcast. I'm not a secret spider expert. So brown recluse spiders do have a toxin, and it has a bunch of different stuff in it. A lot of proteases, which are enzymes that attack proteins or break them down. And when they bite human skin, it causes cell death. It's called dermonecrotic arachnidism. So when brown recluse spiders bite humans, you do get like a puncture wound and then reddish and pus and whatnot. It hurts. Sometimes if the toxin, if enough toxin got in you, it can get like a little bit worse. Like your skin can slough off or the wound will get uglier. But the thing is, brown recluse spiders, as toxic as they are only found in certain regions of the United States, mostly in the South, West, and Midwest, mostly in dark areas like under rocks, bark of dead trees, basements, whatnot. And they don't feed on humans. They don't feed on blood at all. And so really the only time that they would bite you is if they were like in your bed for some reason and you rolled over and they were very scared. And then they went, I'm going to bite to try and defend myself. Mm-hmm. So a lot of doctors who are not spider experts or people who are just looking at their skin and being like, oh, I have like a red swollen thing on my arm. Must be a spider because we don't like spiders socially. They're categorized as creepy crawlies, even though they're just fine. That's where the idea of staph comes in. It's not like the staphylococcus bacteria. It's not getting in through the spider bite. You just got bacteria in a cut or something. And that led to a skin infection. But all kinds of things like skin cancer, ulcers, can all be misdiagnosed as spider bites because if you don't bring in the spider and if you don't have an entomologist or someone who is really familiar with spider bites looking at the wound and you can see the fang marks, then it's probably some other skin condition. And so there's all these articles online of like, if someone says it's a spider bite, or if you Google something and the Google result says it's a spider bite, maybe think about questioning that because you might have something else that needs treatment in some way.
Well, if you want to ask the Science Couch your questions, you can follow us on Twitter at SciShow Tangents, where we'll tweet out topics for upcoming episodes every week. Or you can join the SciShow Tangents Patreon and ask us on Discord. Thank you to @Genkar, @BoyWithHeadache, and everybody else who asked us your questions for this episode. If you like this show and you want to help us out, it's super easy to do that. First, you can go to patreon.com/SciShowTangents to become a patron and get access to things like our newsletter and our very weird bonus episodes. And also, we have a tier where you can get a special in-episode shout-out, which is the tier that patron John Pollock has subscribed at. Thank you to John.
Thanks, John.
Second, you can leave us a review wherever you listen. That helps people know what you like about the show and helps us know as well. And finally, if you want to show your love for SciShow Tangents, just tell people about us. Thank you for joining us. I've been Hank Green.
I've been Sari Riley.
And I've been Sam Schultz.
SciShow Tangents is created by all of us and produced by Sam Schultz. Our editor is Seth Glicksman. Our story editor is Alex Billow. Our social media organizer is Julia Buzz Bazzio. Our editorial assistant is Deboki Chakravarti. Our sound design is by Joseph Moonametish. Our executive producers are Caitlin Hoffmeister and me, Hank Green. And of course, we couldn't make any of this without our putrid patrons on Patreon. Thank you. And remember, the mind is not a coffin to be filled, but a jack-o'-lantern to be lighted.
But one more thing. What you guys don't know is that at Radiolab, people torment me. I hate talking about farts and people torment me like all day long. It's like, let's do an episode about farts. And it's like, I cannot escape it. That you chose. Okay, so here we go. Creepy crawly insects eat and poop like a lot of animals. And depending on what they eat and their gut microbes, they can toot as well. Some bugs, all right, I'll just say fart, they can fart too. Some bugs release fart gases, I hate this, like hydrogen and methane, through holes in their exoskeleton called spiracles. But we have evidence that some fart directly from their butts too. Fossilized flatulence. There are lots of fossilized insects in amber, but a handful of them showcase creatures like ants, cockroaches, beetles, and termites caught mid-fart in their untimely deaths with a distinctive bubble emerging from their anus.
How humiliating for them.
I don't know. If I want to be remembered for anything, and I'm an ant.
Yeah,
because at least
true.
Like you're a little bit exceptional at that point. Most ants don't get their farts fossilized with them.
It's like, was it Edison's last breath was like caught in the bottle, and it's like maybe the soul escaped.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Exactly.
And is caught in the amber.
Yes, we have to figure out how to capture my last fart, you guys.
Oh, okay, yeah. We're on it. That's the whole direction of the company now.